All right, welcome to Gaster Class. Chill, hit that funky beat. So, on this episode, we're going to be doing something a little different. On our previous episodes, one of us has brought a theory to the table, and we've spent the entire episode's length discussing it. This time, we're going to be doing sort of a lightning round. So each of us has prepared a short series of 5-minute theories, whether you want to evaluate that as we are going to take 5 minutes to discuss them, or we came up with them in 5 minutes, reader's interpretation. But we're going to each present these theories, and not just one at a time. Two of us are going to present theories simultaneously, and then the third person is going to judge which is a better theory. Then the person who was judged to have the better theory, they'll stay in the hot seat, but then the judge will rotate in to present their theory, and the loser will become the judge, and we'll kind of keep going from there. The idea is we can get through a bunch of silly stuff and kind of, work through to the real gems, if there are any.
There will not be, for the record.
Yeah, so I'm going to be starting off as a judge, because I said so, and I wanted to, be the benevolent overlord as Gateways and Chill fought it out for my affections. So let's see what they've brought to the table today.
Who's up first? You get to decide. You're the arbiter.
Chill, you want to take it?
Yeah, Chill, since you talked first.
Ah, dang it. Okay. I guess this is my curse that I have to bear then. Okay, so the theory I have brought to the table is about dragon blazers. You may know dragon blazers as the thing that's based on Lord of the Hammer, that's based on the prophecy that Noelle and Susie talk about sometimes at various points. It is not entirely clear if Dragon Blazers is supposed to be a particular game or if it is just kind of playing on the vague idea of JRPGs. The wiki says it may be a reference to the game Soul Blazer, but I think that's made up and not real because that game sounds fake to me. So I have an alternate theory, and I believe that the Dragon Blazers series are directly based on the Final Fantasy series, and not only that, but the numbering of the Dragon Blazers games is corresponding to the numbering of the Final Fantasy games in the US, not in Japan. So Dragon Blazers 3 will correspond to 6, i.e., Chapter 6. It will be 1, 4, and 6.
Okay, what's the
So
significance of this? Explain this to me as someone who hasn't played a single Final
to
Fantasy
give some
game.
support to this, so we really mostly only know about Dragon Blazers 1 and 3. 2 is only mentioned a single time, and that is the game that your sister gets cursed in. So if we assume that that happens sometime in Chapter 4, I'm thinking that could either be referring to Susie learning about the end of the prophecy as some kind of like, she's like the curse, the bearer of this forbidden knowledge. She's like cursed with that knowledge. Or it could also be referring to we learn a lot more of Des and the Knight and that whole thing during that. So it could just be alluding to the Roaring Knight. But either way, I think that 2 corresponds to Chapter 4 in this case, and then 3 corresponding to 6. We know a little bit more about Chapter 3, or Dragon Blazers 3, rather. We know it contains the Ice Palace, and that there's a maze which is usually inescapable without a certain party member. Now, this all comes from the Noelle sweepstakes thing, and it's clear from context that this is actually kind of alluding to the hidden game in the in Chapter 3, where you have the Ice Palace dungeon and you need to get the White Cloak character to finish the dungeon. But my thought is, if this corresponds to Chapter 6, then that could actually mean that this is also foreshadowing that Noelle will be important in Chapter 6, and there will be some kind of Ice Palace-like dungeon that you'll need Noelle to beat. And that could be tying into the Weird Route as well. I know a lot of people have speculated that maybe the weird route has an ending in an earlier chapter. It doesn't get all the way to 7, so perhaps 6 is the final chapter of the weird route in that case. We also know that it's home to the Silver Drake. There's been some speculation about, you know, a fountain like in the town where all of the townspeople are going to be transported to a dark world. Silver Drake definitely makes me think of Snow Drake, who is one of the classmates. So that definitely lines up to me in terms of, you know, a boss fight in this ice palace in chapter 6, being that Snow Drake is in the dark world in chapter 6. That's mostly all we know about it. We have some other like small things, like there's the, you know, Susie is the dragon, which could mean various things. Obviously that lends a little bit of anti-credence to the sister getting cursed thing. But, you know, she is still a party member, which is important. That is a thing that's mentioned about the sister being cursed. But that could also be playing into Susie's thing of subverting the prophecy. That's like a big thing. That's mostly all we know about it. Again, the rest is like pretty tiny things that I would guess would be fairly inconsequential. Notably, kind of smoking gun thing, other than just like, oh, it's kind of a JRPG that I think could mean that Dragon Blazers and Final Fantasy are the same, is another thing Noelle mentions kind of offhand on her blog, is that the manual for the game alludes to that the big bad villain can cast evil spells that'll get you stuck in walls, which is just an excuse the game developers made up for bugs that get you stuck in walls. And that is potentially a reference to a thing in Final Fantasy IV, which in a developer newsletter, they basically did the same thing where they were like, oh, there's the Curse of Extinction, which can softlock the game, and it's just a cover up for a bug. But it could very well be alluding to that. And that would be a very direct line from not only Final Fantasy, but specifically Final Fantasy IV, which is one of the games that was released here as 2, so would be as part of these 3 things. That's pretty much all I got. I just think that, you know, maybe the 1-2-3-1-4-6 thing could mean something. What do you think?
Okay. I'll withhold like full judgment and thoughts until I hear Gateways' theory. But I really, yeah. I'm surprised we went for the Final Fantasy angle and not the Dragon Quest angle, given, you know.
Well, I didn't have a good idea for Dragon Quest, and also I haven't played them.
Gotcha. Okay.
We also know that Toby is a Final Fantasy fan because Final Fantasy VI is very explicitly referenced in Undertale with opera scene.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I know jack fucking shit about Final Fantasy, so this is all kind of news to me. I do have one question for you, though. Which Deltarune character parallels Tifa Lockhart?
Well, she was in 7, which is not one of the games that is part of the trilogy that I'm talking about here. I think that that is a case of, you know, Lord of the Hammer. They never got to finish the story. There is no Dragon Blazers 7.
So what you're saying is if we want Deltarune Tifa Lockhart, we have to write with the pen of hope and create.
We have to write with the white pen of hope. And really, that's what we're doing right now.
Hope in the Italian House of Representatives. This is how we get there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing I know about Final Fantasy is the fucking Tifa Lockhart incident.
About Deltarune. So why don't you tell us about your Deltarune theory?
Yeah, so I've come prepared with a theory that I've coined Jackenstein tree theory. So in the Jackenstein fight, I believe it's the second or third attack. There is a little tree that appears on the side of the screen. It's like a green tree. And there's like an exit that pops up in that direction. And when you go towards the exit, you're taking too long appears, the door will shut, the tree will like turn red and grow a little bit. And then like a new entrance will open up, or a new exit for the room will open up on like the opposite side of the screen and like the little chimney of the house. I think that this is important. I think it's pretty clear that trees are being referenced as a major theme of like Chris's trauma as it, you know, kind of shows up in the egg rooms. And I think that, you know, especially in the chapter 4 egg room where we get that there is a Chris's, you know, traumatic memories manifest as a tree on the little art easel, right? I think that somehow, some way, trees are being used as a signifier for Chris's mental trauma, and thus the fact that there is a tree that like tricks you in the Jackenstein fight is relevant. What does this mean? I think that there are a couple of things this could mean. One, in Jackenstein's lines, we learn that he basically says, "Oh, I only come out during the festival." He's like some kind of festival animal. Some kind of festival decoration, right? I think that it's very possible that kind of the tree in his fight is linked to Chris's trauma somehow being related to the festival holiday. I think that it's very possible that, for example, maybe they were looking for Chris and Des were like lost in the woods, found some kind of tree, and that was like part of how Des got lost in the underground. Chris, whatever the details.
How does the timing work out here? Because there is like a, because I could believe it, right? Like a festival is like a great time for a bunch of kids to get separated from their parents. Right?
Yeah.
But then we also know that there's like it's heavily implied from everything with Noelle that when Des got like, or I guess this could be like a separate incident from when Des got lost, right? Like maybe they went back or something.
But sure.
That like, yeah, when Des got lost, it was like deep winter. And when is the festival? Like when is happening seasonally? I got the vibe that it was like a summer
festival.
So we
don't really know. Here's my take on it.
It's probably not winter, because it doesn't look like it's winter because all the trees have leaves on them.
I think it's like a... Here's the thing. While like the trees do have leaves on them, you can see the festival guy, the wolf in the mayor's house setting up like Christmas decorations around the mayor's office. Now that could just be because, you know, it's like mayor holiday, blah, 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 whatever. I think there's also a non-zero chance that the festival is like combo Halloween Christmas, some kind of like weird thing of that, and that it is like winter, and this is like winter break for in that time zone, because you also have to consider Asriel is coming home from college. That doesn't really make sense for it to be Halloween, even though we know that Jackenstein is like a Halloween gif, a Halloween kind of whatever. So I think a non-zero chance that this is both Halloween and Christmas, or like some weird holiday fusion sort of thing. I also think it's important to note Jackenstein is mentioned both as like a festival thing and a Halloween thing. And the game did release on Halloween. So I think that date could be important, just as Christmas is important. And like, that is like a fundamental part of the Deltarune kind of trauma painting, is like maybe Des was lost on the Halloween release date. So that's kind of the information that I have come prepared with. I have any other than just, I think, yeah, Chris's trauma related to trees, related to the festival, and also like Jackenstein's room, darkness, dark worlds, blah, blah, blah.
Okay, so we basically have Final Fantasy theory and Jackenstein tree theory here. I'm going to give it to Final Fantasy theory. Gateways, yeah. I think you did discuss well. But this isn't always going to be the tiebreaker, but I think here I was just like, I'd never heard Chills theory before. While I have heard people like talk about and speculate on that attack in Jackenstein's fight a little bit. So I think you approach it in a new way. Yeah.
No, for sure. I will say I did come up with this. I didn't realize people were talking about that attack. I'm fucking behind the curve. I literally was just watching a video today of like someone doing the Jackenstein fight, and I was like, wait a minute, that tree is weird.
Mm-hmm. I think they're talking like it's like the same people who are like talking about who got really into talking about the Chapter 3, like, secret route game. They, like, kind of exhausted talking about that, they're like, what if there's other meta stuff in mini games in the game? And so there's been, like, a little bit of discussion about that. Especially with, like, the home motif and stuff, yeah. In that fight.
For sure. Well, it looks all like right. I am stepping into the role of judge. Well, since we just heard Chilgo, I guess now that I'm the judge, Caillou, I'm forcing you.
Let's do it. Let's
kick it off.
Yeah. So I think this is actually very funny because, my theory is also based on a Square Enix property, so I'm gonna call this Kingdom Hearts 2 theory. Who in the classroom has played Kingdom Hearts 2? I'm gonna explain the full thing anyways.
I'm not on the team.
If you're gonna explain the whole thing of Kingdom Hearts 2, we're gonna be here all day.
No, fortunately, I have not played Kingdom Hearts 2 either, and I only need to explain one thing, which is the intro. Which I'm intimately aware of because I read the Kingdom Hearts 2 manga. So this is where I'm getting my knowledge from, that and some help from friends. But I think that... actually, let me just explain the start of Kingdom Hearts 2, and then we'll go from there. So in Kingdom Hearts 2, you start off playing as this guy called Roxas, who, you know, he's just a normal kid living in this place called Twilight Town with his friends. But as he sort of like reaches there, he's reaching the end of summer break, and weird things start happening. Like, time starts stopping. These weird monsters show up. He keeps getting a keyblade. A weird little girl shows up and asks him if he remembers yet. A bunch of like odd situations and supernatural stuff, and he's not sure what to make of it, right? And throughout, like, he starts like abandoning his friends a bunch, and he's like, he's like. Whenever, like, weird stuff happens, he's, like, chasing after it. And there's a mansion on the edge of town, which he keeps going to. And in it, eventually he finds out that the whole town was created as a simulation by this one guy called Diz. Because Roxas is actually important as a character in and of himself, because he is sort of there's a lot of lore to Kingdom Hearts, but basically he is sort of like the mirrored pair or like the shadow of the main character Sora. And Sora sort of in a previous iteration lost his memories. And so Roxas has basically been placed into the simulation to kind of hang out and like have his memories harvested as Sora's memories are reconstructed. And once Sora's memories are reconstructed, like the whole simulation is no longer needed, and Roxas sort of like loses his entire life in Twilight Town. The reason I think all this is important is because I think that you could draw some interesting parallels with Twilight Town and the main like setting of Deltarune. They're both sort of like these very idyllic, like almost quintessential, like I don't know how to put it, but they're just very like standard cities, you know. They're just like, wow, I've got a diner, I've got like there's like people like frying like hot dogs, even if they're cattails. Like, it is sort of the ideal town in which people live, but there's also sort of like soft boundaries in like a game sense, but also in like a literal thing of like, we don't really see or hear about anyone leaving except Asriel. And we do see, like, people start to manifest, like, outside, like, forget the dark worlds. Like, people are trying to manifest weird behaviors in the light world with, like, Jockington and, like, yeah, there's, like, other weird stuff, like Onion-san or whatever. And there is, like, this, we do, like, end up having a character who could potentially be like a parallel to Chris in the vessel, where there's this, you explicitly create this figure that is for some reason saved in the game files, but we're sort of, you know, not certain of the significance of so far. And do we also have like a like this mysterious figure who sort of has out-of-game knowledge and also is aware of the out-of-game in-game split? Yeah, we do, in the form of the voice that we assume is WD Gaster, who is sort of encouraging us to keep playing the game to achieve some sort of end goal of his own. So I don't know if Toby Fox has mentioned ever playing Kingdom Hearts explicitly, but also it was like a very big cultural phenomenon in the time that he was growing up that I would not be surprised if he did, and I would not be surprised if, in the same way that he has explicitly taken inspiration from Mother and, like you mentioned, like Final Fantasy, just like generally JRPGs of the time, if this was a parallel that was drawn there. Now, what does this mean or imply? I think that this means that in the same way that the mansion on the edge of town in Twilight Town contains Sora and essentially his memories, there might be a thing that the shelter, because there's lots of great shelter theories, but my thing is that in a similar vein, the shelter at this point contains the vessel or the player character that we make at the start of the game. And that essentially to some degree or another, the town as we know it, not just the game, but like the town as we know it, is a simulation by WD Gaster to try and fill out that vessel for some purpose, which I think is borne out by some parts of the of what Gaster has said, that I think it's kind of a goal, like a goal of his. So that's kind of where my theory is at, that there are distinct parallels between the approach that the introduction of Kingdom Hearts 2 takes and Deltarune takes, and by following those parallels, we could kind of get a hint at, well, not the exact specifics, where some of the general placements of things in Deltarune might be going.
So, like,
okay, I looked it up. The only connection I can find between Toby Fox and Kingdom Hearts is that Toby and Yoko Shimomura did an interview together one time to promote the remake of Live Alive, because that's where the song that inspired Megalovania came from. But that, and she also did Kingdom Hearts music, but the interview was not about that and didn't really mention it. That's the only thing I found.
Right. So that's Kai, is your pitch for like the future of the game, is that you said the vessel is like learning from the events of Deltarune? Is that like the idea, or am I misunderstanding?
Yeah, or like because I think there is like a With Roxas and Sora, there is a little bit of like real boy syndrome, where Roxas is basically regarded by everyone as like this, as like a fake, or like a, because he's like this shadow of the main character. It's like, oh, this is an important thing. I think it'd be interesting if it's sort of like the reverse, where it's like the vessel is for some reason significant, because we know that it's significant in some way, but I think it's like, hey, Chris, like, we're gonna use your experiences and your soul and like all of these things that are happening to create this other figure. Especially because like this is like spiraling off elsewhere, but we sort of know that like the end game of Deltarune is potentially not heading in a great direction. It is kind of the vibe I get, you know, where it's like, even Weird Route aside, like Chill mentioned earlier, like the idea of a dark fountain that consumes the entire town, right? Where it's like, we know that there's like Gerson has a line about like, you know, an ocean of ink or whatever washing over. So I think there could be a thing of like, and we also know that there's like a lot of mentions of like using the save points to go back in time. Like you talked about the chapter 4 egg room. There's like the easel where Chris like draws the same picture over and over again until they get it perfect. But by the time they manage to do that, everything is murky. So there could be something there where it's like the vessel as sort of like a way to do it right this time is kind of like that's a vague theory, but like I'm basically like the vessel is important to Gaster for some reason and it's learning from Chris, let's just put it at that.
Sounds good. Awesome. Well, I fuck with it. Children,
I did find a Reddit post that said cracked theory, but Toby Fox is Tetsuya Nomura. So maybe you should get in contact with that person.
Real big.
Have we seen Tetsuya Nomura and we know that he's got that Japanese, right? He's got that Toho project.
All right, I'm up then.
Yeah, kick it
off. You're up then.
Okay, my theory is about the concept of the audience. The audience as a concept shows up a couple times in Deltarune. The first time we see it is in the Spelling Bee segment when Birdly is talking about the Spelling Bee. Second time that's come off on the show, which is kind of funny. He talks about how it was like the validation of the crowd made him want to keep pursuing excellence. And the interesting thing about that to me is the little sprite that shows up at the bottom of the screen to represent the audience is the same sprite that shows up in chapter 3 for the audience in like the TV world and stuff, the little cheering black silhouette monster looking guys. It's the same visual for both of those. And so that made me think, okay, what is, does this audience mean something? Is this leading to something? And this of course made me lead to the other big time the audience has mentioned, which is the Spamton Neo fight, where he talks about audience, are you watching? But then the flavor text in the battle is there is no audience. So I was like, okay, what does the audience mean? And so I was thinking about, okay, audience in chapter 3. It starts off, it's big, it's cheering, everyone loves it. But then as it goes on through the TV world, everyone starts quitting and the audience disappears. And once the audience disappears, you know, the darkness start turning to stone and bad things start happening. And then that, of course, culminates in the boss fight. Interestingly, in the boss fight, the audience comes back. The audience sprite returns in the boss fight against Tenna after the audience disappeared and all the bad stuff happened. It comes back for the final battle. So my thought, as for what this audience represents, is it literally is people who are watching playthroughs of the game. And we know Toby is not above doing a meta thing about people watching internet playthroughs, because Flowey famously has the lines at the end of Undertale Genocide where he talks about all the people who are too cowardly to do it themselves, they just watch. And so my thought is, this is the way that the audience starts out very excited and it gives you validation, but then towards the end, they all start petering out. It's sort of like, you know, people get on board for the start of when there's something cool, it's new that's happening, but after you've done however much of it, your audience starts to drop off, people start to lose interest. And I think that could be paralleling the release strategy of the game in terms of like general interest. He could be, maybe Toby was, his thought was like, oh, it's not going to be something people are as excited about as more and more chapters come out because it's not the new and exciting thing anymore. And we even see there's a meta joke about like chapter release structure content of degrading quality. Tenna has a joke about that in chapter 4. And so maybe this is like kind of Toby being a little bit anxious about if people are really going to be that enthusiastic about the game. So in that case, it could even just be like the general audience of the game, not even just people who are watching playthroughs. But the reason that I find that part particularly interesting is from the Spanton fight, where he's doing all of this stuff to please an audience even when there is none. And this whole idea of you're not seeking validation from yourself, you're seeking validation from others, as sort of flipping the thing of Flowey's thing, where it's like Flowey was targeted at the people who were watching, whereas this is kind of flipping it and targeting the people who are playing the game for content, who are doing it not even because they like it or are getting anything out of it, but because it's a new popular thing that people want to see on streams or videos or whatever. And so, like, you put all of your self-worth into trying to please an audience, and you're not really getting the value out of the piece of art itself, where it kind of goes back to the Burley thing with the spelling bee, where it's like, you know, when I won, I got the validation of the audience, and that made me feel great. But that's not something that's going to last. It's going to go away just like Tana's thing did. That's pretty much all I got. I kind of winged this one, but I had like very scattered notes about this, and then I just kind of improvised the rest.
So I guess like my question to you is, in the Spamton fight, when it says there is no audience, like, obviously a lot of people, if the explanation is like, it is people watching the show, obviously like people are tuning in for the Spamton fight, right? What is your kind of like meta read on that and what that means in the Spamton fight?
I think it's less people aren't tuning in for the Spamton fight and more, like, Spamton is the one broadcasting and he's looking for that validation and nobody's giving it to him. He's put all of his eggs in the basket of looking for other people. Like, he wants to be the star, but like he put all of his in like self-worth in that and then he hasn't got any. That's even kind of the strings thing where he's being controlled by that. He's not following his own like freedom.
Hell yeah.
That's the Deltarune word, freedom. Get it? Laugh.
Freedom. And like you play the little like motif right here. My name, my name, my name. That was the fucking lick dog.
Eh, close enough.
Da 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 da. But yeah, okay. So with these two theories in mind, I think we have two really interesting theories here. How do I pick between these two? Oh, this is so hard. Okay, here's my thought. I think that both of these theories are very cool. I think that, Chill, your theory is like something that I can buy is real. But I think I'm going to have to go with Caillou's for my winner pick. Because I think Caillou's, like, I think the implication of it is really cool. And like the what it means for the upcoming chapters. Also, it's fucking Kingdom Hearts, and that's cool. I don't know.
Damn.
I've never played it, but I think
Square Enix game theory meta theories are the meta.
I don't know any Square Let's Enix games, so you guys are gonna have to come up with one for next round.
Well, yeah, you're going first though. So
congrats on your win. I'm judge for this round. And yeah, Gateways, you're up. What do you got?
All right. I have something really fun. I think you're going to like this theory. My theory, I've coined it, Des is just like that theory. So, hear me out. Okay? When we initially... Okay, let's start from the assumption Des is the knight. We're going to start there. In the knight fight, we get a lot of flavor text about how, like, Chris sees the knight and is just like, and there's like immediate flavor text, the back of your head hurts. There's like other stuff about like pain Chris is in, your head is swimming, you're like all this sorts of stuff. And other flavor text, you know, throughout the game kind of leads us to the belief that Des at least semi-regularly hit Chris with the wiffle bat. That's not a good thing. That's not a normal thing well-adjusted people do. Kind of cringe to hit your sister's best friends, your like childhood friends, little like baby child in the head with the hammer. Not good. And during the Lightner's Live show, Tenna has the flavor text about how Des made Chris and Asriel watch fucking like risque music videos with alligators and bikinis. Again, as like a like, I, obviously it's tough to estimate all the characters' ages, but like if you put Asriel and therefore Des at about like 19 and Chris and them at about like what 15-ish, and say it's been a couple of years since like Des disappeared, isn't it a little crazy for like to be like, oh, I'm gonna take this child and I'm just gonna throw up the fucking like ass popping music videos, you know? Seems cringe. You know, if you say it
three times in the mirror, Des shows up.
But like generally we get a sense that like while a lot of people do seem to love Des, Des also seems to have this like really strong rebel streak, like unafraid to use violence very casually, like absolute D-gaffer. And it's just like, what if Des is just like a bad person? So here's my theory. This theory rocks. So here's my theory. It's that number one, Des is just a bad person. And number two, Des is fully conscious as the night and is just choosing to be evil because that's her vibe.
I kind of love this theory because I think it's almost like an extension of like what people were thinking about Chris, because they were like, oh no, we're controlling Chris. And then it's like, oh no, Chris has been like a little shit for like a long time, you know? Yeah. Chris, like, yeah, like what saying... is the thing about like Chris like chasing people around or some shit? And it's like, but it's like the less benign version of that. And I think it would also be so interesting because like we hear about Des through the lens of people who loved her, right? Like primarily through Noelle, who looked up to her. And it would be really funny if it was just like, no, she was just kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And like you didn't realize because you looked up to her.
Yeah, exactly. That's like the basis of my theory is kind of just like, the entire perspective of Des is through the lens of Noelle. It's through this like idolization. It's this like, you know, love you sort of thing. But like no one else has functionally anything to say about her. And even like Chris, anytime Des is even brought up a little bit, Chris like flips the fuck out, right? Obviously there are a number of reasons why that could be, but it could just be related to like trauma because Chris didn't like being hit in the head with baseball bats. So my pitch is that while Carol and Chris are working together to like quote unquote save Des or something, I think that Des doesn't need to be saved. And in fact, that Des is in there. Des is fully like consciously making the choices that she's making. And I think that the Knight is on team player. Like, because I feel like there was this whole thing about sides, right? Of like, oh, it's Carol and the Chris and the Knight versus like Ralsei and the player and Gaster. And it's like, what if the Knight's just on team us? What if the Knight's not really the Knight is like a part of the adventure? It wants to keep the adventure going the same as us. It's in it for she's in it for the love of the game. She, you know, clearly there's some relation to Dark Worlds with Des, like before everything went down with like the way that Shom was like a character on Asriel's computer. A lot of people have theorized, right, that Des was originally a part of the prophecy, or not originally part of the prophecy, but like originally went to Dark Worlds with Asriel. I think there's a real chance that Des is maybe Susie gone too far. Des is someone who said, I don't want the adventure to stop, and kept going. And
she
so
really likes
her,
LARPing.
She really likes, but it's like, this is her like continuing the adventure and deciding, okay, if I can't be the good guy and like keep the adventures going, I'm going to be the bad guy so the adventures keep going.
And that's exactly what Susie did in chapter one, remember?
Yeah. Exactly. So
there you go.
Yeah. So Des is just like a bad person. Everyone is kind of like trying to work around her, but like fails to realize that, no, that's just Des. And her ultimate goal is to keep the party going until she croaks and have fun in Dark Worlds, fucking around and beating the shit out of Chris.
Funny stuff. I'm a fan.
Let's go.
Okay, I think we've exhausted that one. So Caillou, what do you... This is going to be a hard one to top. So you better have brought your A game.
Okay. I'm going to call this one Chomp Theory. And basically, I want to talk a little bit about why Chris is so, like, mouth forward with a lot of problems. Because this comes up in Chapter 4 more than any of the others, but we see it with, you know, chomping down and eating the apple in the weird round, like Chris biting their own hand. There's definitely a thing where it's like, as a mode of expression, Chris likes biting. And this might sound stupid, but I do genuinely think there is something to the idea of you have this character who can communicate in limited ways, and one of them is this. What is the significance of that? And to me, the most explicit time where we sort of see Chris like eating in a way that is weird is the moss. Yes, it comes back to the moss. You know, for some reason, there is a patch of moss in every single chapter that you can eat. And the lines around it are kind of like they're humorous, right? Where it's like, yeah, you love eating that moss, huh? You eat it so great, huh? But also, like, it talks about you can perpetuate the cycle of existence by eating moss. There's another one where it's like, you know, even the moss drinks water or something, if I remember right.
Yeah, you have to perpetuate the cycle.
Yeah, and I think that both games do is like they couch something that is genuinely important in, but is strange in some way, in like the veneer of comedy where it's like, oh yeah, that's our Chris eating moss. And I wonder, basically this brings me around to, I wonder how long, if Chris went like exploring with Des and that's when they went missing, how long was like Chris missing for? Did Chris just walk home and then Des was gone for a while? Or was Chris also missing for a while and then came back and then Des was out there? Or could there be some sort of like weird time thing with the Dark Worlds? Mainly because I think that like eating moss to me is not a behavior that you think of unless you're like desperate and hungry, you know what I mean? So it makes me wonder if like Chris at some point was, while like in this forest and exploring with Des, like there was a point where they were lost and hungry and they had no other option but to sort of like eat this fucking moss. And like there's obviously an implication that they're like their general silence even before the soul came into play was sort of a result of this trauma of like being like lost in the woods or whatever. But I also wonder if like it has something to do with this, because my only thing there is like you use your mouth to talk and you use your mouth to eat. But I genuinely think that like there's potentially a connection there between like their loss of communication and this idea of like to survive, I'm going to eat this. Now what does that fucking mean, you know, in a genuine sense where it's like, okay, haha, funny, like they eat the moss. But I think that this sort of alludes to Chris being willing to do anything to survive. And we've seen that, like, there's allusions to Chris being willing to do violence, like, in the sense of, like, with the chapter 3 thing, there's like a you liked it, huh, and the whole thing in, like, chapter 4 egg room of, like, you know, you can't wash off what you've done. So there is, like, some sort of, like, shame or guilt involved with some sort of violence that Chris had to do. I'm not saying there is going to be some sort of, like, cannibalism thing going on, but I am saying that there is going to be that, like, Chris is going to eat someone in a non-God-fearing, is going to eat something or someone in a non-God-fearing way, or has already done so to survive. This is my theory. And I call it Chopper theory.
Pretty interesting. My question would be, if Toby wanted to call attention to Chris eating things weirdly, why is Chris the one who picks up Susie to eat the snack tray, not the other way around?
Because the snack tray is like a normal thing. Also, it's fun. Also, Susie vacuuming it up is pretty funny. Like,
it is, but Chris could also do that.
I think part of it, though, is also, like, I mean, one of the common interpretations I've seen of, like, Deltarune as it currently stands is that while the soul is possessing Chris, the soul can't really make Chris eat, and Chris is, like, starving. I mean, so I think, like, you know, both times Chris has taken freedom, they've immediately gone for food. The pie in chapter 1, the chocolate milk in chapter 4. I guess chocolate milk is not food. It's food. Fuck off.
If you told me I'm having a delicious meal and it's meal that's only glasses of milk, that's another connection. Mm-hmm. So I just owned myself.
Yeah, get fucked. But no, I think there's a very, like, reasonable chance that starvation is part of this, because, like, the soul cannot make Chris eat anything in the light world. The only thing the soul can do is, like, you can make them, you know, eat items in the dark world. You can make them, like, go stand near the fridge in the light world. But, like, I think the only time where Chris eats food with the soul in them is the pancakes in chapter 4. And even then, I'm pretty sure there's no eating animation. I think Chris just sits there with the pancakes in front of them. So
isn't there something about, like, saving the pancakes for later?
Yeah, and then fucking and then Sans steals it out of your fridge.
Mm-hmm.
So I super buy this theory. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, this is a tricky one because I like both of these. Man, this is tricky. I think that Des is just like that, is like, I don't think it'll happen, but it's also not impossible that it will, in a way that I find appealing. But I think the implications of the Chomper one are way more interesting, even if they're a little bit less funny, I guess, but they're still pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the final W of the night, I'm gonna have to give it to Caillou for the chomp theory. I think this one's pretty cash. But both teams fought hard for sure.
Both teams fought hard. We came at it. We came at it swinging.
Yeah, I genuinely really like Des is just like that, because I think in terms of, like, the writing, like,
yeah,
like, you could do some really fun stuff where it's like, oh my god, Des, you're back, and it's like, yes, fuck you, Noel.
I've been here the whole time.
Yeah.
What do you mean I'm back? Like, I don't. I like, obviously most of that theory is a bit. I do think the ending, like, three sentences are very possible, where it's just like, Des is in there and Des wants to keep the adventure going. I think that's very possible.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's lots of people who are like, oh my god, I love Susie's character development, as though, like, I think people are falling for, like, there's still three more chapters, guys. Like, I genuinely do not think that this is the end of where Susie's, like, messaging or arc is going to end up. And I think there's so many people who are like, wow, I love that Susie, like, loves Hope now and things are going to be great. I'm like, I think there's probably going to be a little bit more there, especially because, like, yeah, Susie still has this thing. I want to keep.
Yeah, like, I'm with you. Like, did you not see the end of chapter four? Did you not, like, realize that, hey, Susie's, like, faith in something is being shaken, and, like, that's going to, like, we put her in a blender, like, shake her up in a little snow globe.
I think that it would be really fun for, like, if there is that Susie Des parallel, for that to be how Susie is like, oh shit, okay. Yeah, so basically, nice theory. I like it.
Yeah. Yes, this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed this. This was good lightning round. And did we all end up getting exactly one win?
No, I fucking loved it.
Yeah,
I got two wins.
Well, I'll take it. So Caillou is the winner, I guess.
Yeah. Caillou is the winner of lightning round. I do feel
Let's go!
Good
I didn't even prepare anything for this episode. Did you guys have theories that you didn't get to, but you want to one line?
I had
half of one, but I think we should save them for a potential future second lightning round episode.
Oh, that's true.
Okay, yeah, I'm down. Okay,
I'll keep mine in the tank. I think it's a heater. I'll tell you that if our dear friend of the podcast Wendy is listening, it's one that you'll love.
Ooh,
I'm sensing some Jockington content.
Yeah, we get some Jockington content in the pipeline. That's all you get from me.
Yo, okay, teaser. But yeah, it sounds like that's going to be it for this lightning round episode. Hope y'all enjoyed. And yeah, I'd say you'll hear from us next week, but given our recording schedule, you'll hear from us eventually.
You'll hear from us during the month of September, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, until then. Bye.